Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com and author of the Prayer Prescription Series. In fact, the Prayer Prescription Series is the sponsor of this show. My guest today is Shahina Lakhani, creator of ThroughLifeAndDeath.com. Shahina is a hospice nurse and author with a spiritual and holistic approach to nursing care. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. I think that I need to try and call in again and see if that doesn't help the situation, because Shahina is not with us and is trying to call in, and my name and number is not registering on the switchboard. So I am just going to try again. So I am back, and Shahina is having a difficult time connecting. And my number is still not showing up on the switchboard. So that is very, very odd. I could just don't understand that. I'm so sorry, everybody. Search. But if this is not going to work out, Shahina and I can do this next week, is what I'm thinking. Because my number is not showing up. I have no idea whether anybody can hear me or not. There is somebody in the chat room. Let me just see if anybody can hear me in the chat room. Can anybody hear me in the chat room? And we will see what happens with that. Sometimes Blog Talk Radio has little glitches like this, and I could try to get some help. See here. Oh, there we are. Wonderful.
You hear me?
Hi, Ken, now. Hi, Shahina. How are you?
Very good, Kate. How are you?
I am wonderful. I have no idea what happened there, but we don't have to worry about that.
Right. Technology. Things happen.
Things happen. That's right.
So that's all right. It's all good.
It's all good, and now you're with me, and I'm happy. So
that's right.
Tell us.
And I'm happy.
Tell us. Yeah, how long have you been a nurse? And I know that now you are doing other things, but nursing is probably something that will always guide you along your way.
That is true. It will always, always guide me along the way. I've been a nurse for longer than I care to admit. I graduated in, I'm going to date myself here, in 1986. With a diploma in nursing, and then I did a one-year diploma in midwifery. And so from there, you know, beginning of life, giving birth to babies, to life brought me to hospice, which is sending people back to where they came from. So it's been an interesting journey. I've learned a lot along the way. It's been exciting and it's been heartbreaking. For a lot of different reasons, especially because, you know, the way nursing is right now, where the world is right now, you know. Where I am today, nursing has a great deal to do with it, for sure.
Yes. Are you still practicing as a nurse?
I am actually a little bit. I do mostly teaching, not clinical nursing as much anymore.
Wonderful. Well, we need teachers. We need people to enter our profession and to feel like it's worthwhile, even though we are all kind of discouraged and maybe even disgruntled in a certain way. But I think it's the corporate nursing that makes it so difficult. Sorry about my dog. I might have to just put him somewhere.
Right. That's okay. My dog is doing the same thing downstairs. I think they hear each other. They feel each other's pain, you know, while we are on our call.
Exactly. So, I think that it's the corporate nursing that makes it difficult for our colleagues.
Well, I mean,
you know,
what I mean by that is that
we're not being supported, basically.
Right. And Kate, that's exactly what it is. And when you look at the whole thing, though, you know, I used to believe that, hey, you know, nurses need to take control of their profession and do this and do that. And as I started looking at the whole, you know, the way the world is right now, the way our society is right now, what's going on in nursing is a symptom of how our society is working. Nursing is a very feminine profession. It is a feminine profession, actually. The masculine side of nursing is medicine. And it doesn't matter if you're a male nurse or a female nurse. If you're a male doctor or a female doctor, when you're a doctor, that's a masculine profession. And when you're a nurse, it is a feminine profession. And all things feminine in our society are what happens to them?
They're oppressed. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Very oppressed. I guess it's hard it's hard for people to really acknowledge the fact that women are oppressed as they really are, and not only in this society but throughout the whole world.
Throughout the whole world, and it's you know, women, not as in gender women, but feminine overall, because you know, men have feminine side and masculine side, and so do we. And and so what's going on is that the feminine overall, the creative, the procreative power, giving birth, that power is so so feared that it's oppressed. You know, if we controlled this huge, big power, then we would not be controlled by it. I mean, and it's evident in how we treat our Mother Earth. We, you know, do all sorts of things to it, and we're denying that there is anything going on with our environment, that there is, you know, impending disasters if we don't correct ourselves and reverse course. We do not want to acknowledge that as a society, as humanity. We are not looking at that. And the reason being is that we are scared of the creative power. You know, what creates, what's dark, what is hidden is not, first of all, understood or respected at this time. And the only way we can really move forward in this world and get out of all this drama that we have, all these wars that we have, all these, you know, fear that we have, is to actually allow the feminine to come forth.
That's right.
Women will have to, women will have to be the, you know, flag bearers and perhaps do more in the beginning, but men will join because it's for the, for both genders. It's for the whole humanity and for the whole world to thrive. We'll have to go back from, you know, being so highly masculine to bringing it to balance and paying more attention to the feminine side of our creation of ourselves.
That's right.
So,
now you've written a book called The Forbidden Love. How can readers get a hold of that book? How can they get a hold of that book?
Oh, definitely. For The Forbidden Love, if you go to my website, which is through THROUGH life, LIFEANDDEATH, death. So through lifeanddeath.com. And to get to the book, what you do is / and it's the hyphen forbidden hyphen love hyphen e and hyphen book. So it's or you can just go to the website Through Life and Death, and there is a tab over there, and you can just click
on that.
It. Either way,
yes, I see that.
So either way, you get to it.
And is this book an e-book? It says, right?
It is an e-book, yes.
Is it on Kindle?
It is not on Kindle yet.
So you should try to get it on there. It's not too hard.
Exactly.
I think we tend to, shy away from this technology.
Right.
But that is not hard. It really is not. So I highly recommend it.
I should look into that. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And what is the book about?
Okay, so the book is it takes you on a journey, so to speak. It starts with my some of the incidents or events in my life, but it's those events are presented in a very metaphorical way. So it's not just the actual events, but it's really metaphorical, kind of. It's almost like dreaming to me. And then from there, it gives you, the readers, it gives you a way of getting in touch with yourself. The forbidden love, the name itself is a metaphor, and it stands for love for our own self and the society's notion that you're not supposed to love yourself, because if you love yourself, then you are in some way a narcissist or a selfish person. Which is not true, because what makes us a selfish person is not having enough. love. And the only way we can feel loved is when we actually acknowledge and accept ourselves as who we are. So we have to first love ourselves, to know ourselves, to be in touch with our own inner voice before we can actually express love to somebody else or to receive real love from somebody else. Because, you know, society has this society has this view of love that is more about sex and control than it is about anything else. And love is not sex, mm-hmm. and it's not control, you know. Even for the, you know, love for the kids, sometimes the parents are like, if I were to just be able to control my kid, it'd be okay. But actually, love is very liberating. It's allowing people to be who they are. And of course, as parents, we have to make sure the kids are safe and everything else. But love really is knowing your inner true self. Mm-hmm. And that's why I really love, you know, when we say namaste in, you know, Hindu religion, it means that I bow to the spirit within you. So that is what love is about.
Right. You know, the whole idea, the thing about love your neighbor as you love yourself is a double whammy, because so many don't mm-hmm. love themselves at all. So they don't even say, how can you love anybody else if you don't love yourself? And the fact is, the forbidden love, and that is a great, great title of that book, given what you just said. We don't love ourselves at all. And that's the whole crux of the problems that we have.
Exactly. And, you know, and a lot of times people think that loving yourself is, I don't know, taking on nature walks and you know, going to a spa and indulging yourself. It may be a part of it, you know, because that's physical comfort. However, love goes way beyond that. Love goes mm-hmm. into, okay, tell me who you are and I accept you as who you are. And so
right.
the book gives you actually some strategies how do you start to create that inner dialogue and inner acceptance.
Rapport.
Within yourself.
Rapport.
Yeah, inner rapport. Because,
inner
exactly.
rapport, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's
so how
wonderful.
Do you start
so
to,
we mm-hmm. yeah, go ahead. Tell us at least a few tidbits as to how to do that.
Okay, so the book actually has an acronym called SHINE, which gives you five things that are very, very important for you to do if you want to get in touch with your own inner self and build that inner rapport and begin to love yourself. And the first letter, S, stands for surrender action. And it is a word that I made up, but it's a combination word. It's surrender. When we surrender, then we are directed to do things that are important for us to move forward in our life and, you know, on the quest of our own inner journey. And those directions are then, it's our responsibility to follow those directions and put them into action. So hence the word surrender action. So that's the first thing. And by the way, these are not in any order of importance. All of these things are important. So that is one of the things that you can do. And then you create a habit of harmony. So H is for habitual harmony. And how would you create a habit of harmony? You will do that by listening to yourself, by being in communication with yourself. Because if you know what's going on within yourself, there is no mutiny, there is no fight. You know, have you ever mm-hmm. had this where, you know, there are 10 voices speaking inside of you and you're like, okay, just leave me alone. I don't want to listen to any one of you because it's driving me nuts. I mean, doesn't it happen to
mm-hmm.
us?
Yeah.
It happens to most of us. It's like, you know, so many people talking inside of us. And a lot of times we are scared of listening to that because we don't know what's hiding in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember one time I was at a weekend experiential, and one of the girls, or women, young women, she started to cry because we were going through this experience of just getting in touch with your inner self. And she says that, I'm so scared that if I go there, I will go crazy and I'll be in a nut house. And
aww.
So that's how strong the fear is. And I could relate to that. I was like, yep, I definitely, I've been there. And a lot of us can, if we really think about it. That's why we don't want to listen to our inner voice, because we don't know what's hiding there. Because it's not always pretty. Sometimes it's really angry. And
mm-hmm,
sometimes, you
right.
know, it is upset. Sometimes it's sad. So we fear that because we're like, okay, if I allow those things to come out, how is it going to affect my everyday life? Would I be able to go to work in the morning? Would I be able to take care of my kids? Or whatever else that our fears are. And the biggest fear is, of course, it will drive me nuts, right? So that is about creating harmony, is to listen to yourself. And then the next one, I, is intention and intuition. So you set an intention for that inner healing and for knowing yourself, and then you follow your intuition. Mm-hmm. To do so. And then N is for natural emotional transformation. That means learn ways of naturally transforming your emotions, because emotions come up. They come up for a lot of reasons. And, you know, one of the easiest way of getting a little bit of a handle on your emotion, do you know what that is? Very easy. We do it every day, all the time.
What is it?
It's taking deep breaths.
Oh, of course.
It's to be mindful to your breathing. And as we become mindful to our breathing, it becomes, you know, we can then start to really talk to ourselves and see what we can do about emotions. So learning that habit of transforming your emotions. And a lot of times emotions may mean something very different from what we make it out to be. Say, for example, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times when somebody is anxious, and I learned this during the time when I was going through NLP training, neuro-linguistic programming training. And what I realized was that the emotion of fear is very close to the emotion of excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
only how we frame it. If we say I'm scared of this, then the excitement that our body is feeling, all that adrenaline rush and all that, you know, the increased heartbeat, we take it as fear. Whereas if we say that, hey, this is something that I'm looking forward to, then that same body reaction, we take it as excitement. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, it is.
So,
yes.
So, and then, so those are, let me see. Oh, E. E is for, you would not believe what this one is. It's called effortless forgiveness.
mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people frown when you talk about forgiveness. They're like, how dare you even say that? How do you think that I should just, you know, condone what the other person did or what the event was? No, you don't have
mm-hmm.
to do that. What is important is that we let go of, we allow ourselves to let go so that event or that person no longer controls us. So forgiveness
right.
actually is a selfish thing to do. It's like, okay, I'm letting this go, so you're not controlling me anymore. It, not really selfish, but, you know, it is something that is good for your own self, and that to release that emotional attachment to the event or the person. And by doing that, it liberates us, it liberates our energies, and it allows us to do what we want to do in our life, because our energy is not tied up in something that is useless. That's, you know, keeping us down. Plus, if, you know, if we allow events and people to control us like that, then guess what? They have a strong hold on us. They decide when we can be successful or when we can be happy. And you don't want that, right?
Right. What we really need is a almost like a knee-jerk reaction towards forgiveness. Always forgive, 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 you know, instead of
right.
thinking having the first knee-jerk reaction be resentment and lashing out,
right.
wishing somebody harm for what they've done. But really,
exactly.
we're doing to ourselves what we imagine somebody else has done to us.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And you know, it's a habit. It comes with time. And it comes from knowing yourself, being at peace with yourself, that you then are not worried about what the other person says and does, because you know your own inner self-worth, and it's not tied to other people, the events, and
right.
stuff like that. So
that's right.
Those
that's
are
right.
the five, those are the five things. You can read all out in the book. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
thank you.
Right. Thank you. And it seems like these five things have to do with a lot of different things, but I would say inner peace would be inner rapport, inner peace,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
How do these five, how does shine relate to Maslow's hierarchy of needs? For instance,
Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So what it is that, you know, whether we're talking about shine or whether we're talking about holistic care, and that's where
mm-hmm.
actually I started to to kind of put the two and two together, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, when I was working in hospice. And you know how Maslow says, hey, if you are not fed, you wouldn't be worried about having a roof over your head, and if you're not don't have roof over your head, you're not worried about, you know, being an enlightened person, right? So what Maslow said, that we all have these basic needs. Now, most of these, the needs that Maslow talks about in his hierarchy of needs are physical needs. And just as we as human beings have these physical needs, and they are common to everyone, it doesn't matter if you were born in Africa or in Antarctica or in America. You all, we all are going to be hungry. We all would need shelter, right? And same is true with our inner needs, our emotional, spiritual, and psychosocial needs. We all have same, or the other way of saying it is the existential needs, which includes your spiritual needs, psychosocial needs, and your emotional needs. So we all have same needs. Now, how they are expressed may be different, but we all have those same needs. Say, for example, we all have a need to leave a mark on this world, right?
Yeah.
And we all ask this question, hey, has my life been worth anything? I don't know if you remember Saving Private Ryan. The first scene in that movie is that the guy says, who was Private Ryan, now an old man, he asks his wife, tell me that I have lived a good life. Right? So, and then there's one more, you know, I used to love watching these little sitcoms, and there was one called Growing Pains. And in the last episode, the season finale, not season finale, but the series finale, the last episode, they showed that Mike, who was one of the kids, he wrote on their wall, on their house, where they were moving from the house, and he wrote there, Mike Seaver was here. And that speaks to the need of a human being to leave their mark. And it's an existential need, or it's a spiritual need that we all have. And same is true with a need to be loved. You know, we all want to know that we are loved for who we are. And the need for safety, the need for having permission to move on, and all of these. So just as Maslow says the physical needs of being hungry, wanting shelter are common to everyone, so are these existential needs. But we as a society don't recognize that. We are so individualistic that we talk about how everybody is different and they have different needs. But the bottom line is that these needs are expressed in a different way. However, when you look at the bottom line, they're all the same.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That's right. That is true.
So what happened was, as I was working as a hospice nurse, I recognized these needs, and I said, hey, you know, we're doing so much physical care. We got to start talking about these things. And it was funny, when I started talking about it, people thought I was nuts. They were like, well, everybody's different. Okay, you can't do that. And I'm like, no, but when you think about it, you know, it's, people are looking for safety. People are looking for love. People are looking to see that we understand that they have lived a purpose, you know, on purpose life and all of that. So, when we address these needs, and by the way, these needs are not just when you're dying. These are ongoing needs, and if we cater to them, if we are constantly doing a short life review and saying, okay, am I doing what I want to do, or what my life's purpose is? Am I, you know, forgiving people? Am I loving people? You know, all of that, then it improves the quality of your life. So these needs are always there in the background. They become more intense when we're going through any life change, whether it is divorce, whether it is getting married, you know, moving. They become more intense. They come more to the forefront because we have to give ourselves permission to move into that new area of our life. We have to feel like, okay, it's going to be safe. And we have to feel like, okay, you know, so far what I have done has brought me here. So all that is important. However, at the time of death, it becomes an emergency. It's like I used to call those people who used to linger on because they didn't have closure, I used to call them my emergency patients. Because Yeah.
Because
yeah. What happens is that they're lingering. They're like, they can't even take a breath properly, and they're lingering and lingering because they have some kind of unmet need. And you know, 99.9% of the time, it wasn't the physical need that was unmet. It was one of these psycho-spiritual or existential needs. And, you know, there have been studies done on death and dying and stuff like that, and sometimes they would call these needs existential needs. Sometimes they would call them spiritual concerns. And what they found is that when these spiritual concerns or existential needs are met, patients who had either life-threatening illness or they were dying, they became more comfortable. Their quality of life got much, much better. Their pain level went way down. And so all these, you know, research has been done, but hospice has not really caught up to that for a lot of different reasons. One of them is, you know, who wants to spend time and money on training people on this? And it takes too long to address those needs, whereas, you know, physical needs, we can bait people and smile at them and leave, and we're fine, right? So
right.
A lot of reasons
now, people,
it's not. Go ahead.
I was going to say, people at the end of life, have you noticed a lot of times that they are, you know, not talking about those who have existential angst and have unresolved issues, but talking about the people who find a real liberation in their death. Do you see that a lot?
People who find real liberation in our death, in their death?
Liberation, yeah, the fact that they're about to be liberated in this lifetime, and the fear of death, is the fear of death goes away for them?
You know, it's interesting. I think it's Carolyn Mace who says that we're not afraid of dying, we're just afraid of the pain of dying. And the pain of dying comes from unmet needs. And that's what people are scared of. Now, I have taken care of plenty of people who were not scared of their death, really, because they had all these existential needs that they have, or the spiritual concerns that they have, they had worked through them. They were happy
right.
with who they were. They were happy with what was going on with them. I mean, of course, everybody wants to extend their life by, you know, days, months, or weeks if we can, or years. But if we can't, then I'm happy that I have done everything that I want to do. Or if I haven't done what I wanted to do, at least I'm at peace with it.
Yes, yes.
So yes, I have not really, well, let me see. It's funny. I have not heard any of my patients that they were scared of dying. Now, I've heard nurses, hospice nurses, or other hospice professionals say that they were scared of dying, or not dying themselves, but of the dying process. Isn't that interesting?
Well, don't you think that people are afraid? They're pretty much afraid that there's nothing beyond this life, I think. I think so, especially in this society. You have all these rules. You have to accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, or else you're going to go into, you're going to be annihilated if you don't do these things, whether it's Christianity, Hinduism, you know, if you're a Muslim or whatever you are, you have to abide by these rules or you will be annihilated. And that, I think people kind of think, no, when they get to be, like my mom was sort of a Catholic who had not practiced Catholicism for years, and you could tell by the end of her life she was thinking that maybe she should take the last rites or just to cover her ground or something. I think a lot of people were like that, but I had Julia Asante on my program who wrote the book called The Last Frontier, which has to do with the last frontier being the fear of death is what really rules everybody. It just is the thing that rules everything in every society. And what would life be like if we didn't have this fear of death? And this is what the conversation really was about in her book and in our conversation.
Interesting.
And think about it. I don't think we would have all of this brutal murder, all of these things that we see in our medical world. Think about that.
Right.
Medicine is ruled by the fear of death. There's no other way around it. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
If we did not have that fear, we would be liberated, all of us, together.
In a lot of ways, but you're right, and when you think about it, a lot of times the reason we're scared of it is that because we wonder, first of all, we think that we're going to vanish in oblivion, right? And everybody wants to exist some one way or the other. And the other thing is that how is God going to receive me? Am I going to be safe with God? And so when we don't feel like we're going to be safe with God, then of course we are scared of dying. In fact, that comes under safety. That's one of the spiritual needs. It's the need for safety, and it is safety of your loved ones that you're leaving behind, and the person who's dying, their safety in the process, not only in the process of dying, but when they are received by God. Is God going to receive me with open arms? Am I going to be punished for what I have done in life? Because we all make mistakes. We all do stuff knowingly. A lot of times that we know is not the best thing to do. So we all wonder if I'm going to be received by God safely and with love. And a lot of that has to do with religion. Any religion,
right?
You know, it doesn't matter which one it is.
Them.
You know, that's
right.
That
exactly.
If you didn't do this, this, and this, and if you didn't follow this very path, you are going to be in big trouble when you come see me.
Every
religion says that. So yes, a lot of it has to do with that as well. You know, our fear, and the best way to alleviate that fear really is to actually think about the mercy of God. That's been talked about in every religious text, you know, whether it's Christianity, Buddhism, Judaism, Islam, you know, all religions talk about mercy of God, and that's what we need to start talking about instead of having this spirit of fear and anxiety. And interestingly, a lot of times the professionals, end-of-life care professionals, are themselves scared. It is really important to learn and to have that inner journey for somebody who is going to be there when people are dying, for you to have your inner work kind of, you know, at least nobody's going to be perfect, but at least be on that path so you can relate, not only relate to that, but also to help alleviate suffering and fear from those people.
Yes, and I think that healthcare professionals, especially people who are working in hospice, have a responsibility to really get to the bottom of what it is that this is all about. It can't be a surface thing.
You would think. You know,
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
That was my biggest heartache when I was working with hospice. In fact, that was the... Let me see. Second biggest reason I left hospice work. One was because all hospice nurses were just overworked. 24/7 phone calls from people. You know, weekend, days, nights, it didn't matter, and every week like that. And that was one of the biggest reasons. And the other reason was because. That they did not, you know, most hospices and hospice workers weren't really. Let's see. I guess willing would be okay to say we're not really willing to get into addressing the psycho-spiritual issues or the existential issues. They just wanted to do the physical care, and it became where it was a daily struggle for me.
That is heartbreaking.
Right.
Yeah.
It is heartbreaking, and I was, you know, I was like, oh, okay, I'm a teacher, by the way, by passion. so I said, I want to be an educator, and I want to teach hospice people. And I was like, well, none of the hospice companies want it. So that's when I started thinking about writing a book for caregivers, and I've finished the first draft of that book. It's
wonderful.
Called the name of the book is. Love, forgiveness, and all that matters. And it's a handbook for caregivers. And also for people who are dying, you know, for the dying, for their caregivers and family members. And it talks about all these spiritual concerns. It talks about how to work through those spiritual concerns so that you not only are able to help alleviate suffering for your loved one who's dying, but also you are able it gives you a sense of peace and a sense of accomplishment that you're helping somebody through their journey and not standing on sidelines feeling like there's nothing you can do. Because a lot of people think dying is hopeless, but it is not. It is the most beautiful experience to be in the presence of people who are dying. It's the most transformative and beautiful experience you can have if you allow yourself to feel through it, if you allow yourself to be the conduit of what is important in that situation. So that
these yes, and the same would be true of birth, too. Birth and death, to me, being by the birth bed and being by the death bed are just almost identical in the way they feel, in my opinion.
That's right. It is identical. The only difference is that birthing is a 99% of the time is a happy occasion, whereas dying, most of the times it's considered as something which is a sad occasion. But
well, I believe the whole idea of death, however, is that has to come out of the closet as being one of the most joyful experiences that a person can have, and people need to realize that that is exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, I agree with you, and it will come to that. You know, when we accept the feminine, when we allow the feminine to come forth, then the birthing process and the process of dying will be considered as the same processes. It's like when a child is born, they have to go through that cocooning inside the womb so they can grow and become the full fledged baby that they are. So it's true for a butterfly. You know, a caterpillar has that cocoon around it so that it can, you know, first of all, devolve into a mush and then become a beautiful butterfly. And the process of breaking that cocoon is what makes their wings stronger so they can fly. And mm-hmm. so it's true with death. People who are going through that process of death, I think people who are fortunate enough to have that process, because there are definitely sudden deaths, right? But people who are fortunate enough to have to be able to go through that process and take that time, what they're doing is that their inner needs and their inner journey is being completed. Their soul is now, you know, reopening its wings and it's ready to fly. And a lot of times we think, hey, if I expedite this process or if I didn't have to go through this, I would be better. But no, the truth is that there is time and place for everything. And that time that you're taking, whether you are, you know, sick or not sick, the time it takes for you to go through the process of the time when you're developing your wings. You're changing from a physical being with a soul to go, and you're going from that aspect to becoming a soul again and shedding your physical being, a physical form. So it is a highly involved process. So it is important to allow yourself to go through that process. And a lot of times we are so scared of losing control that that we want to just say, just expedite this process. And that's how, you know, death with dignity came along, is that, you know, I have a right to control how I die, and there nothing can be further from truth, because not really. Okay, now you have a right to be to have a quality of life while you're going through that, and it's really up to you and your caregivers to help you create that. And it can be done. It can be done.
Well, we have reached the end of this wonderful time that we have together, and if Blog Talk Radio, Blog Talk Radio is about to cut us off. So we don't want that to happen. So let's have a meaningful end here. Your website is throughlifeanddeath.com. People need to go and look at that, and your book, The Forbidden Love. We will look forward to your new book, which is going to help caregivers heal themselves, really.
Yes, and to help anybody who's going through a process of change, Yes, the process of change, especially the people who are dying and their loved ones. So it's a handbook for caregivers and people who are dying, but it does apply to change overall. And also, I wanted to tell you that I have this book on sale for it's more than 60% off the cover price right now, and it's going to be the sale is on until midnight tonight, and after mm-hmm. that we'll still have a sale, but it would be 30% off of the full price. So just I want to encourage everyone who's listening to go ahead and take advantage of this opportunity and to go ahead and buy that book by going to my website, throughlifeanddeath.com, and clicking on the link that will take you to the book page, and then you can scroll down and buy the book. And also, I also do card readings, intuitive angel card readings. And for this program,